Hello, Park Street. Happy Easter again. Thanks. This is the last recording that we have to share. It's technically day 43. We're continuing our celebration of the resurrection. I'm back with Pastor Nate to do one final episode, so thank you for wrapping this up with me.
Yeah, dog. This has been awesome.
Today's passage is John 21, starting at verse 15 and going through the end of the book. So you want to go ahead and read it, Nate?
I'd love to. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him a third time, "Do you love me?" Then he said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you that when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you're old, you'll stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you don't want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." Jesus turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, "Lord, who's going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he said, "Well, Lord, what about him?" And Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what's that to you? You must follow me." Because of this, the rumor spread among the believers that this disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, then what's it to you?" This is the disciple who testifies to these things and who wrote them down. We know that his testimony is true. Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written.
All right. Thanks for reading. We've reached the end.
We've done it.
Of John, of the book of John. I like this passage a lot. It's like, it has so many implications for us. When we did the recording about, I recorded with Neil Henkel, the kind of the opposite passage of this, Peter's denials.
The denial. Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about just kind of being in the place of Peter and just how kind of simple and easy it would be to deny Christ, especially the moment you are put into danger.
Yes.
Any danger.
Yes.
In this case, a lot of danger. Right. But even for us, you know, we aren't necessarily put in that level of danger, but, you know, we're put into relational danger sometimes or emotional danger or awkwardness because we associate ourselves with Jesus, and that can, you know, sometimes it gets weird. But then, you know, I like the book closes up with this kind of interaction between Jesus and Simon Peter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the three denials followed by the three questions, you know, "Do you love me?" And it's interesting to me that Peter can say, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." You know, and that's all he says. He doesn't say, "You know, about that time, you know, and I did that, I kind of said I didn't know you." And I mean, I think they both know what's going on, right? But I mean, he can say that he loves Jesus, even though his love is flawed and incomplete. He can really legitimately say that he loves Jesus. And I find that to be very comforting, knowing that my love for Jesus is quite similar in nature, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a part of me that really does love Jesus.
Yeah.
And it's sincere.
Yeah.
And there's yet there's lots of parts of me that that don't. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's like, mm-hmm, if Jesus were to ask me, "Ryan, do you love me?" I'd say, "Yeah, I do." Mm-hmm. You know, but like, you know all things, you know that I love you, you know, I do love you.
Yeah.
But like, you can also see the whole part of me, right? Like, not, right, it's not this love that is, you know, that's already completely perfected or completely whimsical. You know, it's, yeah, it's not, it's subject to changing your mind and, mm-hmm, questioning and doubt and all that stuff. It's like, but the question is, you know, like, do you love me? And Peter says, "Yes, Lord, I do."
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, that I love this passage too. I don't know how you can't love this passage as a as a disciple who stumbles and falls, you know, many times. And we always have in Peter this great encouragement of, you know, like, yes, this is part of it. This is part of the stumbling forward into obedience of Jesus. And so the two things that I really think are great is the first is the three questions that obviously are for Peter's benefit. And Peter, it seems like he's not putting it together, but at least he's acknowledging, you know all things. I mean, that's his refrain. You're like, you already know the answer to this. And you can almost see Jesus going, right, yeah, these questions aren't for me. They're for you. do you love me? This isn't for me to know. This is for you to confess.
Yeah.
You know? And so there is a bit of an undoing of like, as you denied me three times, I want you to confess your love for me three times. And so there's this beautiful symmetry there. The other thing that I think is going on here, which I think is equally beautiful, is the recognition that talk is cheap. You know, we could say we love Jesus until we're blue in the face and then shrink back from situations where our demonstration of that love would put us in harm. And Jesus kind of finishes this whole passage with, I believe you, and like, thank you for confessing your love for me. And don't worry, I'm going to give you another shot to prove it to me. Yeah. Someone's going to lead you where you don't want to go. And you're going to have an opportunity to let your life demonstrate that your words are true, you know. And Peter, you know, in perfect Petrine fashion, you know, like, wants to, hey, you know, like, what about this guy? You know, what about him? What about her? And I, again, it's one of those like, yeah, I relate to that. Like, Jesus, I don't want to be singled out and suffer. But Jesus's instruction isn't to measure everybody's obedience against one another and see who's been more faithful. Jesus's instruction is, you do what I tell you. You follow me.
Yeah.
So you're going to have an opportunity later, Peter, and we read about Peter's martyrdom, you know, later in scripture. But he has an opportunity to say, yeah, not only confess it, but demonstrate the lengths of which you are willing to go to share in my love. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that you mentioned that he asked him to follow me, which is John chapter 1, right?
Yeah.
The very beginning of the book says, yeah. Jesus calls the disciples and says, follow me.
Yeah.
And they follow him through all this stuff. And then he still says at the end, you know, follow me, you know, follow me into the, like you said, the suffering that he had, you know, and follow me into like the life of service, right? The life of loving others, you know, like the other part of the answer to the question of, do you love me? And then Jesus says, okay, then take care of my sheep, yeah. Right? Like, if you love me, here's what you do, right? You take care of my people, you know, my church, and their sheep. I'm sure you can appreciate this. I mean, I guess to some degree as a pastor, right? Like, I feel like we are, as a community, right? Like, we are like sheep, you know, like it's very difficult for us to understand, and grow and learn and, you know, and Jesus is there the whole time, you know, and it's like people like Peter, you know, like, apostles, pastors, you know, that come along and say, like, they continue to show patience and to show perseverance with people even through, you know, the kind of the same stupid sheep behavior, you know, that we exhibit, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's
right. Well, I mean, I think of you know, I often think of that as the, you know, our friends who are atheists and non-believers use that as a real term of derision. You know, we're just sheep.
Yeah.
We're just kind of the opiated masses, you know, who've just kind of blindly accepted, you know, whatever dogma that's been handed down to us from on high. So I don't often think of my role in serving the church as somebody corralling a bunch of, like, you know, witless, you know, kind of sheep. What I do think of that it speaks to me more specifically is the idea of, like, it's your responsibility to feed and take care of this community.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
and,
good.
And I continue to go back to the only miracle recorded in all four Gospels is the multiplying of food and the feeding of 5,000. And Jesus' instruction to his disciples is, you feed them. And they're like, well, we really can't. You know, and so there's almost this touchstone back to that, too, of like, no, really, I want you to physically and spiritually and emotionally to feed these people, to grow them up. I love cooking for people. I love bringing meals when people have babies or when, you know, people get sick. I just like having people over to my house for dinner. I mean, because there's something, for me, there's something connected to that. Giving people healthy, delicious, nutritious food is like, and that's deeply connected to brethren theology, the idea of like feeding one another and eating good food together as a Christian, you know, almost a spiritual discipline. And so there's something about that, of being connected to the spiritual and the tangible of feeding, you know, whether it's actual food or whether it's spiritual food, our instruction to continue to serve and feed one another.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of what Jesus says, you know, like when you're young, you were able to do whatever you wanted, right? You know, and now that you're old, that's not the case anymore. And I think there is this kind of, like you were saying, the progress through the Christian life is doing whatever you want, from that to feeding and caring for other people, right?
Right.
And that's, after that whole kind of, I guess, speech, Jesus says, you know, follow me, you know, like that's what I do. I feed people.
Yeah.
You know, I take care of other people. I don't do whatever I want. I feed other people. You know, that's like what it's like to be like him.
Yeah. I really love the full circleness of everything too. I mean, you're mentioning that follow me is like his last words to Peter, which is so, you know, typical of John, that beautiful symmetry. I was talking with somebody the other day and we were talking about an old sitcom. I don't know, Seinfeld or Friends or something. And he said, oh, I don't like that show. And I said, why? And he said, that, you know, they're in the same place they were when they started at the end. And I'm like, well, isn't that every story? I mean, like, we all just kind of go around the circle and then we end up back where we started, hopefully wiser and you know, a little more compassionate or something. But to me, this has really come home in the last few months as we've seen a handful of different folks from Park Street pass away. This idea of you're going to stretch out your hands and someone else is going to take care of you. And so what happens is that the people who live their whole lives doing whatever they want, when they get old, they reach out their hands and they realize that there's no one there to take care of them at the end. Whereas people who've spent their lives serving others, caring for others, a whole community rallies around them and tries to love on them and take care of them before they pass away. You know, we're recording this podcast the day after Al Farnham passed away.
Yeah.
And we saw that in Al's life. Guy who served. And at the end, he stretched out his hands and his family and his friends rallied around him and loved him into eternity. And really, that's a beautiful example of how love comes full circle, you know?
Yeah.
You spend your life giving your love away, but at the end, when you stretch out your hands, somebody's gonna be there to dress you. Somebody's gonna be there to take care of you. And it's just a beautiful image.
No, I like that. And then Peter, right, like you said, Peter's always so awesome.
Yeah.
Because he's always like, during the feet, you know, Jesus washes disciples' feet. Peter's like yo-yoing between no and okay, like baptize me again. And then he's like, he points out, like, so Jesus is telling him, right, about feed my sheep, take care of my people, take care of my church. You know, he's promised to kind of make Peter kind of the cornerstone of the early church. And
right.
And then Peter's like, instead of taking the, like, even in this, you can kind of see the fact that Peter's still not there. I mean, instead of embracing the call to like serve and make himself less, he's like embraces the competitive of like, What about him? Yeah. You know, like, what's he going to get? Is he, you know, is that person going to be have a better situation or a different relationship to you than I do? And I just love Jesus. He's like, yeah, he says the same thing twice, actually. He says in verse 22, if I want to remain alive, what is that to you? And then he says, oh, and then John says, you know, he only said if you want him to remain alive. It's like, what does it matter? Like, what does it really matter what any other person, what God calls any other person to do, right? Like, what does it matter? Why do we care? Why do we focus on that so much more than simply living into what God has given us?
Yeah. Well, what I love about it is it's obviously Peter is still in progress.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a light switch where it's like, wow, I denied Christ and then he died and now he's back. And like from now on, I'm going to be perfect.
It's right.
Like, nope. He's still like still Peter. Still, you know, and I actually love that about Peter. I love that we see him in progress. Even after the crucifixion, he's in charge of the Church of Jerusalem, and he gets in the dispute with Paul about whether or not faithful Christians must remain kosher.
Yeah.
And Peter changes his mind. He gets a vision from God and causes him to change. So that to me is wildly encouraging, that Peter, you know, the person who Christ entrusts with the keys of the church is still in progress. I mean, like, that makes this pastor's heart so happy. I'm like, okay, well, it's okay if I'm still in progress, even though I've been, you know, given this incredible responsibility and an awesome opportunity to serve a church. Like, it's okay if I'm still in progress too. But I think, you know, Ryan, the answer is our fixation on other people's calling has to do with our ultimately our desire for justice and control. You know, we wish that we could control things and we want things to be equitable, but the journey of following Jesus, you know, as he points out to Peter here in the end, is not a journey of control. It's a journey of surrender.
Yeah.
And it's not even a journey of justice, despite what my dear friends, you know, that I adore, who are more social justice minded would argue. You know, I would argue that Christ's mission is a radical mission of grace. And so the pursuit for justice on earth, especially through earthly means and earthly ideologies, is always going to be failed. It's going to be that's not going to work. You see a crime happen and a sentence that seems to be inappropriately light, and people start saying justice for this person that was killed, or justice, and it's like, well, that's not actually justice. Like, somebody being punished more severely doesn't give you back the years you lost,
right,
the
person you lost. You can't do justice.
There's
right.
No real.
It's done.
You know, and I certainly understand a desire for more equity in the world, and I support this.
Right.
And I certainly desire more and less bigotry and less oppression and less sexism. Like, yes, let's pursue those things together in the peace of Christ. But we should also not delude ourselves into thinking that we could somehow picket enough events for justice to actually occur.
Right.
You know, justice is mine, says the Lord. You know, like, he's the one who's going to ensure and usher us that justice occurred. So these two things that we long for, equity, control, the invitation to follow Jesus, is this paradoxical, beautiful, impossible invitation to give up on those things.
Yeah.
Give up on control and give up on equity and just follow Jesus.
Yeah.
And no wonder Peter's like, what?
Yeah. It's not a natural thing to do. I mean, it's not you have to continue to reorient yourself back to that. You know, like, you're given the invitation, right? Mm. Follow me. Mm. And a command, I guess you could say. It's a command, it's an invitation, feed my sheep, right?
Yep.
And follow me.
Yep.
And I hope that, I guess, as Park Street, you know, as a church, that we can, like you said, I mean, the more we give up control, the more that we're willing to give up control, to not worry about, you know, to primarily focus, right, on following Christ.
Yeah.
That's the primary focus, right? Yeah. And if each of us has that focus instead of, well, what about them? What mm-hmm. about this? What about that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's an interesting, I mean, the book, I've really enjoyed this whole process. It's been a pretty exciting and exhilarating. There's a lot of parts. I mean, just when you look at Jesus in an intentional way, there's a lot of possibilities, right? Like, yeah. It's like the book ends and it's like the very last verse, right? Like, Jesus did a lot of other stuff, you know? Like, yeah. If we wrote it all down, we never could fill the books.
I love that John ends with this awesome hyperbole of like the... But I also, I mean, even though he's obviously, you know, kind of speaking, you know, in this kind of funny hyperbolic way, I also love that he's like, you know, we didn't cover it all here, folks. He did other things that we just, you know, yeah. And there's a sense of you have enough.
Yeah.
You know, like we could have exhaustively tried to record everything, but really, this is enough.
Right.
This testimony you've received is enough for you. To follow.
Right, in the previous verse, right? We know that the account of these things is accurate. Like,
yep.
This is true. You can believe it. There's enough evidence for you to believe it.
Yep.
And now it's like, Jesus is alive. What next? Yep. Right? It just, like, leaves it there.
Yeah. You know?
And it's exciting. I think it's cool. Like, I want us to be excited about our own church's following of Christ.
Yeah.
And let the other stuff go, you know, like the outside stuff, the other focused stuff, you know, externalities, you know.
Leah is an heiress to the Jones Potato Chip Company. We know this.
Yeah.
Her Uncle Bob is the president of Jones Potato Chip. And so her grandfather was the guy who started it. She just told me this story the other day, and I loved it, and I want to end with this story. So Leah's grandfather, he starts Jones Chips, and, you know, it's a family business and all the family is helping and stuff like that. There was a time when there was an oil shortage in the U.S. Something was going on and they had to use a different or a watered down. I'm not sure what the issue was, but their solution for the problem was burning a lot of chips. So chips were coming off of the line, and her aunt was telling her the story and said that, like, one out of every three chips was salvageable, and the other two they had to throw away. And so they're basically throwing away two-thirds of all of their inventory in order to bag chips that are, you know, edible.
Right.
And her aunt was so worried, and she went to her dad and said, I'm really worried that this business is going to go under. Like, I'm looking at all these burnt chips and I don't know when this shortage is going to stop and all this stuff. And Leah's grandfather, who I never got to meet, which is one of the great regrets that I have. I mean, I didn't have anything to do with him dying, but, you know, he just seemed like such an incredible man. He said, hey, this business serves me. I don't serve the business. The business works because of me. If the business goes under, I'll just start a new business. And he was not, I'm just sharing that story, you might think this is a confident or an arrogant person. He was not that. He was very humble, very hardworking, very self-effacing man. But there was just this recognition of, I'm not dependent on this business. Like, I am the thing that generates the life of this business. Like, this business is an extension of who I am. And if it doesn't work, I'll just do something else. And I so long for the church to recognize that Jesus is the one that energizes the church.
Yeah. You know,
we spend a lot of time as the church trying to figure out how to defend Jesus.
Right.
And I'm like, backwards.
Not necessary.
Backwards. Right. The church does not exist to protect Jesus. Jesus runs the church. And if the church fails, he'll just start a new one. Which is maybe sounds sacrilegious, but you know, it also sounded sacrilegious in the first century when Jews thought that Gentiles could be entered into God's plan for salvation, right? Like Jesus is like, I'm going to do a new thing.
Yeah.
Because this thing's not working.
Right.
And so I think my heart for the church is like, man, let's just keep Jesus at the center, because this thing works when he is the one driving and energizing the movement.
Right.
And let's not get it backwards, you know. There's a lot of fear. The church is going away.
Right.
You look at Europe. You look at all this stuff. It's like, y'all, Jesus is going to be king.
No, that's... No, for eternity. Right. And ironically, right, if we are able to accept that truth, right, we'll paradoxically be probably much more effective in witnessing to a world, right? Yes. If we're not scrambling around for like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to us? Our culturally we're losing relevance. What are we going to do? You know, like, that's a different posture than like, we have a high degree of confidence in Jesus to do what he wants to do at all times.
Yes.
And in all situations.
Yes.
And our job is to follow him, and that's it.
Yeah.
And we're happy to do that. Yeah. And whatever happens outside of that, whatever.
Yeah.
God's in control of it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's a cool place for... I think it's actually kind of exciting as the church does lose whatever... I guess this is a whole another 28 podcast series, right? About how Christianity culturally has existed in the United States for the last 100 years. Or
sure.
But like, as the church becomes, you know, you see more of the surveys about the religious nuns and all this stuff. Yeah, like, yeah, as we enter into an environment like that, the church has an incredible opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, incredible opportunity.
Yeah.
It's exciting, so.
Yeah, I love it. I'm with you, man. I am one that says, you know, tear down this temple. He'll rebuild it in 3 days.
Yeah.
And if the institution of the church in the United States or in the postmodern world must fall in order for Christ to be lifted up, I say, hand me a sledgehammer, bro. because this is not about us holding on to political or sociological power. This is about us surrendering all of that and following the ways of a homeless carpenter from Nazareth who lived 2,000 years ago and preached a gospel of forgiveness and peace.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Cool, man. Well, we did it.
We did it, man.
Got through the whole book, man.
You were great.
We did it.
I especially like the parts that I was talking.
I love those parts. I love those parts. You actually win. I should have an award here. I didn't get you an award for the most podcast appearances.
Oh, did I do it?
Yeah, you had four total.
Wow.
So I appreciate you were the most frequent guest.
And like the Gospel of John kind of bookended the whole project.
Right, exactly. Man, that was not by design at all. There's a lot of parallels here. From the beginning. Well, I really do feel like I had fun, so
it's amazing.
You know, like, yeah. I had fun, and
let's play it again every year.
We'll see. I don't know where it goes from here.
For the next, maybe you. What's your next podcast project, bro?
I don't know. Right now, I think I need to take a break and discuss it with my wife. I think, watching all the kids right now?
and mine too. I think we should go straight into like insects. Like, what's up with bugs? It's about to be summer in Ashland. There's bugs all every week. We could
talk about a different bug.
Talk about a bug.
I don't really like bugs.
Biblical like allusions, locusts. You've got your grasshoppers.
Bugs. I'm not into bugs. We'll figure out something to do next. Okay. But I appreciate you joining me. I appreciate everybody who's listened. It's been thank you for listening.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that you would do such a thing, but I did want to share them in case there were people out there that existed that would listen to these. So
yeah.
Thank you, and we're done.
It is finished.
It is finished. Jesus is alive. We'll see you next time.
Amen.
See you, Park Street.